First Canto, Chapter 12, Text Number 30. स एष लोके विख्यातः परीक्षिदिति यत्प्रभुः पूर्वं दृष्टमनुध्यायन् परीक्षेत नरेष्विह. सः हि एषः इन् दिस् लोके वर्ल्ड् विख्यातः फेमस् परीक्षित् वन् हु एक्सामिन्स् इति दस् यत् वाट् प्रभुः ओ मै किङ्ग् पूर्वम् before drishtam seen anudhyayan constantly contemplating pariksheta shall examine nareshu unto every man iha here jai shri radha kunj pyare ki shri gaurataya ki. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, S. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki. So, his son would become famous in the world as Parikshit, examiner, because he would come to examine all human beings in his search after that personality whom he saw before his birth. Thus, he would come to constantly contemplate him. Purport. Maharaj Parikshit, fortunate as he was, got the impression of the Lord even in the womb of his mother, and thus his contemplation on the Lord was constantly with him. Once the impression of the transcendental form of the Lord is fixed in one's mind, one can never forget him in any circumstance. Child Parikshit, after coming out of the womb, was in the habit of examining everyone to see whether he was the same personality whom he first saw in the womb. But no one could be equal to or more attractive than the Lord, and therefore he never accepted anyone. But the Lord was constantly with him by such examination, and thus Maharaj Parikshit was always engaged in the devotional service of the Lord by remembrance. Srila Jiva Goswami remarks in this connection that every child, if given an impression of the Lord from his very childhood, certainly becomes a great devotee of the Lord like Maharaj Parikshit. One may not be as fortunate as Maharaj Parikshit to have the opportunity to see the Lord in the womb of his mother. But even if he is not so fortunate, he can be made so if the parents of the child desire him to be so. There is a practical example in my personal life in this connection. My father was a pure devotee of the Lord, and when I was only 4 or 5 years old, my father gave me a couple of forms of Radha and Krishna. In a playful manner, I used to worship these deities along with my sister, and I used to imitate the performances of a neighboring temple of Radha Govind. By constantly visiting this neighboring temple and copying the ceremonies in connection with my own deities of play, I developed a natural affinity for the Lord. My father used to observe all the ceremonies befitting my position. Later on, these activities were suspended due to my association in the schools and colleges, and I became completely out of practice. But in my youthful days, when I met my spiritual master, Shri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, again I revived my old habit, and the same playful deities became my worshipful deities in proper regulation. This was followed up until I left the family connection. And I am pleased that my generous father gave the first impression, which was developed later into regulative devotional service by His divine grace. Maharaj Prahlad also advised that such impressions of a godly relation must be impregnated from the beginning of childhood. Otherwise, one may miss the opportunity of the human form of life, which is very valuable, although it is temporary like others. So his son would become famous in the world as Parikshit, examiner, because he would come to examine all human beings in his search after that personality whom he saw before his birth. Thus he would come to constantly contemplate him. In this way, Parikshit got the name Parikshit, the one who is always examining everyone to know whether they are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, whom he saw in the womb. So the main theme is highlighted here in italics. Srila Jiva Goswami remarks in this connection that every child, if given an impression of the Lord from his very childhood, certainly becomes a great devotee of the Lord like Maharaj Parikshit. There are innumerable examples for this solid truth. Prahlad Maharaj, when he was the womb of his mother, he heard the sublime message of the Bhagavata Dharma from Narada Muni. So by the time he came out, he was already a Mahabhagavat devotee. He had heard everything. He knew. In fact, there is an entire chapter called What Prahlad Heard in the Womb of His Mother. So instead of becoming engaged in childhood pranks and, you know, playful things of this world, Prahlad Maharaj was preaching to his friends such a great philosophy of Bhagavad Dharma. So that's because the spiritual impression created by Narada through the sound vibration that entered the Prahlada's ears, that had already awakened love for Krishna in his heart. So this is an example of someone who got that impression even in the womb. And Prabhupada says, if one is not so fortunate, then at least after the birth of the child, still it is not too late. A child can be given the pure impressions as a child. And there are many examples for that also. When Rupa Sanatan and Vallabh or Anupam, Anupam is also called as Vallabh, all these three brothers, they were born in a family of devotees. Their father was also a devotee, very great devotee. In fact, their father encouraged them to go to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In fact, their father was very embarrassed to see their sons having to work with Nawab Hussain Shah. Anyway, for political reasons, for the protection of the Vaishnavas, they had to work for Nawab Hussain Shah. But they were constantly lamenting in their heart that they wanted to meet Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and take his shelter completely. So they used to write letters to him and Mahaprabhu would reply indirectly. So they were living in Ramakeli. Ramakeli at that time was like a very main, one of the main headquarters of the Muslims. And Nawab Hussain Shah himself was living there, personally. So it is said one day, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, while he was about to go for Vrindavan, he took a detour and he came to Ramakeli, especially to meet these brothers, Rup, Sanatan and Anupa. At the time, seeing this beautiful form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with his golden complexion and lotus petals like eyes, and his long arms extending below his knees, with arms raised, chanting and dancing, all the people were so amazed. Gradually the crowd started coming. Gradually tens and hundreds and thousands of people surrounded him from all sides. And Mahaprabhu was constantly chanting, singing, dancing. And just a few kilometers away, there was the establishment of Nawab Hussain Shah. In fact, there were even Brahmanas who were very afraid that this great sannyasi is coming and chanting and dancing like this. And what will happen to him? It's a great threat for him. Nawab Hussain Shah is a very cruel-hearted king. He had demolished hundreds and thousands of temples. He had desecrated so many deities in so many temples. He was a cruel king. So if he comes to see the sight of a great sannyasi chanting and dancing and all the people following him, he may cause some harm. So they were all worrying. In the meantime, King Nawab Hussain Shah, he had heard a message that some mendicant has come, a saintly person, and he is attracting all the people. So he asked Rup Sanatan, who is that? They said, oh my dear king, he is not to be taken seriously. He is an ordinary mendicant. In fact, there was one Keshav Khan, who was a servant of Nawab Hussain Shah. Nawab Hussain Shah called him and asked him, who is this? I heard that there is some mendicant who has come to our place, and he is chanting, dancing and attracting so many people. So Keshav Khan also said something similar. He said, my dear lord, he is a mendicant going from door to door begging for food. And nobody pays attention to him. He is to himself. And you don't have to take him seriously, forget it. So Keshav Khan was a very pious man. He didn't want to see any harm to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But when he said like this, Nawab Hussain Shah said, he said, what do you mean? This Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He has come in this age to deliver all the suffering souls. And you are calling him as an ordinary saint? It's an aparad, he said. In this way, Nawab Hussain Shah knew what was the identity of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, go and declare my rule all over the country that nobody should cause any harm to him. If anybody would be found to be misbehaving with him, their head would be immediately separated from their bodies. Very strict rules he made. Anyway, when the Brahmanas came to know this, they were simultaneously happy and afraid, because they thought a king like Nawab Hussain Shah, without who has no control of his senses, cannot be believed. Because he may make a rule like this, tomorrow he may again harm. So they wanted Lord Chaitanya to somehow go off from that place. Anyway, one Brahmana was chosen who was given a letter. The letter said that, oh my dear Lord Chaitanya, please kindly move out to some other place. This is a Muslim headquarters. It's a very dangerous place for you. And all that. So this Brahmana went to give this to Lord Chaitanya. The only problem was Lord Chaitanya was constantly dancing, constantly singing. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. So he thought he will stop sometime, so he waited, but the kirtan never ended. Hours passed, days passed, it was going on constantly. So when Rup Sanatan and Anupam and they wanted to meet Lord Chaitanya, but they very stealthily escaped in the middle of the night with no one's knowledge. And they approached Lord Nityananda Prabhu and Guru. And through them they found out the place of Lord Chaitanya. They approached him. So that is the time when Rupa Goswami saw Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this form of, you know, the golden complexion form, his arms raised, chanting the holy name and invoking everyone to join the chanting of the holy name. When Rupa Goswami saw this, he offered prostrated obeisances and chanted this most famous prayer. Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratvishe Namaha. So he called him as the bestower of Krishna Prema. and one who is Krishna himself and who is bestowing Krishna prema to everyone and anyone very freely, liberally, munificently, without any reservation or without verifying any qualification. So later on, Lord Chaitanya met Rup, Sanatan and Anupam in a private place. At that time, Jiva Goswami, who was son of Anupam, was only a small, tiny child, small boy. So he was standing outside the door from a secret place, he was watching. So he saw how much Rup, Sanatan and Anupam, they had love for each other, and how they offered obeisances to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they treated him with so much of respect and love. They were wearing, you know, a cloth on their neck. They were carrying a grass on their teeth, which is a sign of humility. And they were speaking about their fallen nature, how they are more fallen than Jagai and Madai because of serving Nawab Zinsha. And they were pleading the Lord to deliver them. So when Jiva Goswami got the darshan of Lord Chaitanya's beautiful form of Gaur Sundar, and at the same time he heard the prayers of Rupa Sanatan and how they surrendered to him, and the love Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed towards Rupa Sanatan, these things were creating a deep impression in the mind of Jiva Goswami, who was only a very small boy at that time. Later on, when they proceeded back, his father Anupam left the world, went back to spiritual world. So when Jiva Goswami went back, he just couldn't do anything. He was constantly meditating on the beautiful form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In fact, he was worshipping small deities of Krishna Balaram. It is said while his friends would be playing or they'd be studying, Jiva Goswami was not at all interested in any of those things. In fact, his parents were quite wealthy. They had given him nice ornaments to wear, nice clothes to wear, and all the facilities that a rich child would get. But Jiva Goswami would reject them all. And his only hobby was worshipping the deity of Krishna Balaram. Always. He would stitch very beautiful dresses for them. He would make beautiful garlands for them. He would cook bhoga for them, offer them. And he would bow down to them again and again several times. In this way he was spending his time. But there was a very great longing in his heart again to meet Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One day, when he was lying in his bed and sleeping, he got a dream. He got a vision of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appearing in his dream, in the very selfsame form in which he saw him. And then Lord Nityananda appeared. And then Lord Advaitacharya appeared. And Haridasa Thakur appeared. And all the Vaishnavas appeared. And together, they all started performing the Nam Sankirtan, which he saw in Ram Keli. So, this vision went on for a long period of time. After which his dream broke and he opened his eyes, he didn't find anyone there. Again he became very morose. He wept bitterly for losing the beautiful vision. He fell on the ground unconscious. Again he got another dream in which Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda Prabhu, they both appeared. And after some time, he saw that they became transformed into Krishna Balaram, the very same deities that he was worshipping. And again they changed themselves into Gaur Nitai. And he saw that the Gaur Nitai is non-different from Krishna Balaram. Because he saw Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as he is dressed in golden pitambar. Krishna, he saw, he was also wearing a peacock feather. He was playing on his flute. And he transformed into Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in this way, when this darshan became more and more prominent, he saw them coming closer and closer, and he saw them very prominently, as if meeting them personally. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Jiva Goswami, that I am offering you to the lotus feet of Nityananda Prabhu. So always remain under his shelter. And Nityananda Prabhu told him, my dear Jiva, you should always worship Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Gauranga Mahaprabhu as your life and soul. So in this way, they were speaking to him. even in his dream. And then gradually the when he came to external consciousness, again he didn't see them. But this time he was very satisfied by this darshan. And later on, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had told him in the dream, he attained the shelter of Lord Nityananda. When he went to Sri Navadvip Dham, when Nityananda Prabhu took him on a governmental parikrama to all the areas where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had earlier travelled. So, like we hear in this case of Jiva Goswami, the divine impressions that were created just by that one particular incident he saw of Rupa Sanatana Anupam taking shelter at the feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that had such a lasting effect. And later on, Jiva Goswami advanced so nicely under the guidance of Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda told him, you go to Vrindavan, but en route Vrindavan, you should go to Varanasi and learn from Manvidya Vachaspati Sanskrit, and then you should go to Vrindavan. And then he gave him his responsibilities. So you will find in Chaitanya Leela many pastimes of great Vaishnavas who got impression when they were small children. Same way you will find when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to South India. Actually, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's performance of Nam Sankirtan in South India was practically unheard of and unseen before. Nobody had seen before. It was the first time. In fact, Lord Chaitanya going to South India, there is a reason behind it. Lord Chaitanya himself said, I am going to deliver the whole of South India. He says that. And then he goes to South India. So in the Sri Ranganath temple, suddenly the masses of people who had come for darshan, they found this golden sannyasi with arms raised, chanting and dancing, completely absorbed in ecstatic love. So this was a new sight for them, because they have seen people worshipping, a pujari worshipping the deities in the temple. Or they have seen somebody performing Gayatri. They have seen somebody chanting the Vedic mantras. But no one has seen somebody with arms raised, chanting and dancing, singing the holy names loudly in ecstatic love. This they have heard from the scriptures, but here they saw a demonstration, practically. And all the people, they stood in a circle and they were watching this beautiful sight of Lord Chaitanya dancing. And they were all three Vaishnavas. Many of them were also carried by ecstatic love, by seeing this sight. Because chanting of the holy name was not unknown to them. It is there in the scripture. But in this fashion, for the first time they saw it. At that time, one great Brahmana, Venkata Bhat, he came there and he fell at the feet of Mahaprabhu and he clasped his feet. And then he stood up and he begged Lord Chaitanya, please come to my home and please Anand Prasad. And Lord Chaitanya agreed. So upon the request of Venkata Bhat, Mahaprabhu agreed to stay even for 4 months, Chaturmas time, in his house. At that time, Venkata Bhat, he washed the feet of Mahaprabhu in his house and he gave the water to Gopala Bhatta, who was a small boy at the time. He was 7-year-old boy, to drink. As soon as Gopala Bhatta drank that water, immediately he became electrified with Krishna Prema. The next moment, Gopala Bhatta started exhibiting the ecstatic symptoms of Krishna Prema. And he started weeping in ecstatic love, singing Krishna's names. And he became very firmly attached to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also developed attraction for Gopala Bhatta, because every day he would see this small boy worshipping the deity of Vishnu in their house. So Mahaprabhu would see. And Mahaprabhu loved him so much, Mahaprabhu would sometimes pick him up and place him on his lap and fondle him, play with this child. Such was the fortune of Gopala Bhatta. In fact, Gopala Bhatta one day, when he was lying in the bed, he got a dream. Actually, before going to bed, he was lamenting in his heart. What a great unfortunate person am I? Who can be more unfortunate than me? Because I never have had the darshan of Nimaya Pandit with his long flowing blackish curly hair, very beautifully dressed, just like we see Lord Chaitanya Nityananda here. So Nimaya Pandit was dressed like this. So he was thinking, now I am seeing him only as a sannyasi. I have never seen the Navadvip Leela. There is no one who is more unfortunate than me. He was lamenting. How beautiful Lord Chaitanya must have been. All his devotees, they were serving him there, and I was unfortunate to meet him so late in my life. So with that lamentation, when he went to bed, Lord Chaitanya gave him the darshan of Navadvip Leela. The Navadvip Leela was so elaborately enacted in his mind. He got to see practically everything that happened in Navadvip. And he was transported to Navadvip, and he became a part of that Leela in his dream. So, in this way, Gopala Bhatta also got a vision of Lord Chaitanya, who came in his dream and then finally told him that you should serve your parents who are great devotees, and at appropriate time, with their permission, you should leave and go to Vrindavan. So his parents were great devotees also, and they blessed and sent him to Vrindavan in the later years. So in this way, Gopal Bhatta also, as a small child, got those divine impressions. So if we start this kind of explanation about the divine children, we have a long list. We can be talking all day today. We can talk about Narayani, who got Krishna Prema when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave his own remnants from his own hands and fed her. And eating those remnants of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's hands, prasadam from his hands, Narayani became impregnated with Krishna Prema. And later on, she went on to become such a great devotee. She became the mother of Vrindavan Das Thakur, who is Vedavyas. So you can see again example of a small child. Similarly, we can talk of the example of Achyutananda, son of Advaitacharya, who used to suck the lotus toes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was a small child. And simply by licking the feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he became a great devotee of Krishna. So we can add many more examples like this. All these examples are illustrating this point, that if a child in young age, when his mindset is like a wax, if he is molded by the parents in devotional service, one will become a very great devotee in the future. I was reading in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam about Uddhava. When Uddhava was a small child, he used to play with Krishna dolls also. He used to play with the dolls, worship the doll, and he would embrace the dolls to his chest. And sometimes he would become simply unconscious. And he would be always absorbed in the service, or he would become unconscious in love for them. He was not interested in eating or sleeping or playing or sports, it is said. It is said there. Such was, and then you find Uddhava, how he becomes a great devotee later. Very, very great devotee. So, when Uddhava just heard about Krishna, he fell unconscious. Later you find that. So, the childhood impressions are very deep. They remain with a person. So these are the formative years of a child. And it's a duty of every parent to give this kind of divine impressions. And here Parikshit is even more fortunate, that the Lord came to protect him in the womb, and this child was seeing in the womb Lord going round and round carrying the gada in his hands, whirling it. And the child must have wondered, who is this? And he saw the beautiful Lord. We have only heard of the super soul, but Parikshit has seen the Lord who personally came to protect him like that. That way. And Srila Prabhupada tells about his own life as a small child, how he was also worshipping Radha and Krishna, given by his father, Gaur Mohande. So Prabhupada says Gaur Mohande was a pure devotee. In one of his writings he says that he gave me these dolls to worship, and he would bring sadhus and beg the sadhus, not for any material benefit, but beg them that please make my son a devotee of Srimati Radharani. And then whatever his father gave, Prabhupada says, it became solidified by my spiritual master Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in later years. So this is actually the duty of parents and duty of the spiritual master also, and duty of anyone who is in a responsible position. Like, you know, when we talk of child abuse, we often talk of, you know, somebody beating the child or somebody sexually abusing the child, which is commonly known amongst the people. But I recently read a definition of what is the real child abuse. The real child abuse is, if a parent does not give this kind of divine spiritual impressions to a child, when a child is small, and help the child escape the cycle of birth and death, if they don't give that, instead they allow the child to enter into materialistic way of living by pampering them and letting them live a worldly life, and then lead them to the condemned stage of taking on the cycle of birth and death. That is the real child abuse. Because the child is actually made to lose that golden opportunity of becoming Krishna conscious. Like you see, Dhruva's mother, she guided Dhruva to the forest. She said, I don't know about Lord Vishnu so much, but my dear child, you go to forest. I have heard that the sages go to forest to see Lord Vishnu. But I can tell you, if you meet Lord Vishnu, you will be the most satisfied. You will get the love which even a million mothers like me cannot give you. You better go and become a devotee of Vishnu. Lord Vishnu can satisfy you completely. Because Vishnu's devotees who are Vaishnavas, they never feel any kind of hankering or lamentation at any time. They never become angry. They never become envious of anyone. They never become dissatisfied. This kind of material qualities are unseen in the lives of Vaishnavas. Na krodho, na cha matsaryo, na lobho, na ashubhamatihi. Like, you know, you are becoming envious of your stepmother, but let me tell you, if you become a Vaishnava, all this will be gone. You better go to forest. So, glory to the mother of Dhruva, because she guided him to Krishna. Similarly, you see, Rishabhadev is the ideal father. He is guiding his 100 sons. Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam. He is teaching his sons that you should perform tapasya. Isn't it? Like you see, generally, in the Vedic times, the mother and father, they would allow their sons to go to the Gurukula. Why? Because Gurukula is considered like an extended family only. Because now this is one family, but that is a family where the Guru guides the son. And whether a son be the son of a king or son of a farmer, they would be in the same Gurukul, studying together. No special treatment for son of a king. So the parents allowed the teachers to train the children in that way. And the teachers could mold the children. You see, molding the child sometimes might involve chastisements, sometimes might involve correction, and the child will not be pampered as the parents always pamper the child at home, isn't it? But the parents are ready for that. You see, in Srimad Bhagavatam, there are two great heroic children, and both these children were tortured, after which they became very great devotees. You see, Dhruva Maharaj, he was mentally tortured by being neglected by his father. And then he goes to forest and becomes a great devotee, isn't it? And you find Prahalad, he was so terribly tortured, and that is the biggest example of child abuse, of how Hiranyakashipu was, you know, showing his crooked eyebrows, you know, and, you know, looking sharply at Prahalad and speaking such harsh words. And Prabhupada says such a child doesn't deserve any such chastisement at all. But Hiranyakashipu gave such chastisement. Still you find Prahalad becoming a very great devotee. The greater the hurdles, the greater the devotee he became. You find that. Not that he had some psychological problem, as many parents say nowadays in modern times, that then a child should not be scolded by the teacher, child should not be, you know, beaten by some stick or something, you know. And they say that, you know, because their little personalities would be warped, you know, we don't want to see them getting affected. So, as soon as a child is, you know, taunted by a teacher, the child will make a mobile call to the parents. Mama, my teacher is scolding me. You know? And immediately the teacher will call back the parents will call back the teacher. Or they will take her to the principal or whatever. So nowadays teachers are afraid to control the children. Nowadays. So then how can they train them? How are the children going to be molded, trained? Amongst all of us here, how many of you were beaten by a stick by your teacher? You see, almost all of us. But you will not hear this probably after a decade in India. Nobody will hear about a teacher taking a tamarind tree stick, you know, and whipping the children. You will not hear that. So Johnson said, spare the rod and spoil the child, you know, he said. So in America, the parents treat the children like adults when they are 5-year-old children. And the children take off from home when they are 12 years. And they have no relationship with the parents at all. Of course, the goal of a Vedic teacher is not to enjoy punishing the child. That was not the goal. The goal was to give them Krishna consciousness. The goal was to make them disciplined. So, compare the Vedic life and the modern life. In Vedic life, besides the mother's care and attention, the child also has extended family of, you know, there are grown up unmarried girls who take care of the child. There are also aunts, there are grandmothers, grandfather, uncle, different type of relationship. So the child gets to learn also different things from different people. And besides that, a housewife, she has so many things to do. Like for example, cooking, cleaning, laundry, washing, and keeping up the home, upkeep of the home, everything. So the women were able to do their duties while the other relatives could take care of the child. Like modern women, for example, they are taking care of their children, or if it becomes difficult, they give it to some aya, you know. And that, what do you call? Some kind of lady, servant maid. And that lady is more concerned about her salary, and she may not be able to give the love and kindness and attention as the relatives would be able to give the child. Or there is another very easy way out. You switch on the TV and put the child in front of the TV. And then you think, now no more nuisance for me now. The child will not be doing mischievous activities. He will be watching cartoons or anything. But many a times cartoons are envious cartoons. They show things like envy, greed and such things. So all are, again, those impressions are stored in the mind of the child. And then later on, like in America I heard, there are more than something like 20,000 criminal scenes a child will get to see before he passes through the age of 10 years or so. 20,000 crime scenes a child gets to see. So these are all impressions created in the mind of children. Then how are they going to become gentlemen? So, in this particular aspect of creating impression in children, the teachers and parents have a very vital role to play. The Shastras do not emphasize academic qualification as important as the personal example that a parent or a teacher can set for the child. Like for example, the parents and the teachers should be completely free from the flaws of breaking the regulative principles. Like meat eating, gambling, intoxication, illicit sex. You know. So they should have a high character. High character actually means this, following these four regulative principles very strictly. So if parents and teachers are themselves not following these things, then the children will catch lessons which they should not catch. Although the parents may not want them to imitate them, but they will catch those unwanted things. Like for example, we were going to a school for teaching value education. So that the teacher would be in a mini skirt, you know, and she would be having lipstick and all kinds of cosmetics in her body. And then, of course, when we went to teach, she was also sitting in the last bench and she would attend our classes. And she was very appreciative of the classes. And she used to tell us that, you know, when we try to teach value education, the children don't hear. Of course, we didn't give her an answer to that, but we understood why. But there are many children who even ridicule the teachers because this kind of decorating the body with all kinds of cosmetics and this kind of dressing and other things makes the children understand that this teacher is insecure within. What is that insecurity? We think that only when we are able to impress the children or impress the people of the world, only then they will respect us. So you try to get that respect by superficially impressing them. But I have seen teachers when I was in my school, they would be simply dressing like sadhvis. You know, very, very simple sari. Some of the teachers were stout. Some of the teachers were thin. They would be very, very simple. They would be very motherly. And they were not dressed with any cosmetics. But our love for them was not because of the superficial look they had. But the kind of oceanic love they had for us. And the genuineness in their behavior, their character, their saintliness, their devotion to God. These were the things which attracted us to the teacher. But unfortunately, the modern teachers think we have to impress the children with, you know, we have to wear the dress in a particular way, otherwise they won't respect us. It's a wrong notion. It's a misnomer. So in the same manner, parents and teachers, they have a very important role. So the children, many a times they imitate the parents, they imitate the teachers. That is why it is said here, about the impression. The impression we create is going to come later. I have a practical experience. When I chastise a younger devotee, then that devotee also goes and chastises someone. So we create a chastising culture. Isn't it? So when I am very strict about, very rigid about standards, so people below me also, they also become rigid about standards. They will see that. So later on I learned the lesson that yes, I have to be very strict about standards, but I also have to learn to mend people, not break people. That's the big difference between mending and breaking. Prabhupada said, mend it, don't break it. Because it's a kind of culture that we give from the top. It always comes from the top to bottom, not from bottom to top. It goes from top to bottom, this kind of culture. In a family, the mother, father, they set the trend for the children. And the children will hand over the culture to others also. Like that. You see in some homes, the daughters, they are very pure and chaste. When they go out, they know how much to deal with the boys. How much to be careful. What is the limit they know? What to talk and what not to talk. They know the limit. Not that they will be very loose, because it comes from the top. The culture is handed over by the superiors in the family. Similarly, sons also, if they are raised in a good sanskar family, they will fear doing wrong things. They will fear to commit sin. Because the teenage is the time when they are introduced to smoking, drinking and all that. But a boy would never do those things if he is brought up in a, raised in a good culture. The sanskar which is given in the childhood has a tremendous influence on the child. So one gets that type of stability in life. Now Prabhupada writes in one of the Bhagavatam purports that often we think children are innocent. It is true, in childhood they look innocent. That's because the senses, the mind, senses and the intelligence have not yet become developed. When they become developed, over a period of time, the seeds of lust will manifest over a period of time. Just like the full moon is hidden in the sky on Amavasya day. Does that mean that there is no moon in the sky? No. There is full moon which is hidden, which is not seen now. Similarly, the lust, pride and greed, all these things are hidden in the subconscious mind of even a child also. So when the child, when a person is a small child, because the senses and mind are not developed, so one is unable to manifest lust, pride, greed and all that. But when they grow to 14, 15, 20, you know, 20 years, then all these things will come out in a very big way, the old conditionings. But here comes the important point. If the parents, when the child is young, before the senses become fully blown up, senses and the mind, before that, if the parents give the child divine impressions, those divine impressions will give the sufficient willpower to the child to resist the temptations that arise from conditionings. So they are bound, even you will find, even children born in good families also, when they grow up, they also become lusty, they also become greedy, they also become proud and all that. But they are able to resist those temptations. How? Based on the divine sanskars given at the right time for them. So if we didn't get such sanskars, we have to create new sanskars. So Prabhupada established ISKCON society so that we can every day, on an everyday basis, we create new sanskars. Every morning, rise early in the morning, sing and dance, chant the holy names, read the Bhagavatam, associate with devotees, render services. All this is creating impressions. The only problem is we are bigger children. We are not small children. If we were small, it is little more easy. For the small children, the impressions can be created much more fastly than the grown-ups. Because when we grow up, we also have our whimsical mind and the disturbing senses. With all these things, we have to create the impressions. So those devotees, those who are wise, those who become submissive to this process of Krishna consciousness, by submitting themselves to devotees, they can create impressions, spiritual impressions in their mind very fastly. And those who are rebellious, they will get very little impression because they will not be able to take full advantage of the process of Krishna consciousness. So, if we are able to control our mind and senses and follow the four regulative principles strictly, it is only because Prabhupada established this wonderful society to offer us the positive sanskar, the spiritual impressions. Now we are talking about children here in this purport, about Maharaj Parikshit and other children. It is not only relevant to the, this purport is not only relevant to the children. This could be applied to all the people who are in the position of leaders, and all the dependents could be compared to children. Like for example, for the parents, they have children. For the counselors, they have counselees. Or anybody in the role of a sannyasi or a president or a guru, everyone who is in the role of a leader, they all have the subordinates and dependents who look up to them, who are looking up to them to advance in Krishna consciousness. So if they cannot set a high-class example of a Krishna-conscious personality, they will be doing a very great disservice to their dependents. Because if the leaders are motivated by material desires, are wanting to have some facilities, wanting to have some position, wanting to gain some prestige, wanting to gain some distinction, if that is observed by the subordinates, then they will also pick up the same signals. And they will also be hankering for these superficial things in life. And they will not be able to become powerful leaders. Actually, powerful leader is a powerful servant. Otherwise, one is not a powerful leader. One who is the best servant can only become the best leader. So, as I was telling earlier, most things are caught than taught. Every one of us, we are contributing to the culture around us. And to the degree you are higher in altitude, in your position, to that degree you create a bigger impression in the culture around you. By the way we think, by the way we speak, by the way we act, behave. Tyagena, shilena, gunena, karmana. Chanakya also says these four things. You should estimate the greatness of a person based on these four things. Just like the Itha chaturtam kanakam parikshate, nigarshana chedana tapa tadanehi, tata purushasya chatutam parikshate. He says, in the same way a purusha should be tested, like you test a gold. How do you test a gold? By upbraiding it, by cutting it, by putting it in the fire. What's the fourth one? Nigarshana. Chedana means by hitting with a hammer. Dhaad, hit with a hammer. So, the gold is tested in these four ways. By upbraiding, by cutting, by burning in fire, and by beating. In the same way, how do you estimate the greatness of a person? He says, tyagena, shilena, gunena, karmana. Tyagena means how much a person is detached from materialistic things of this world. Material attachment. Material attachment not only attachment to the things of the world, even to position, post, name, fame, prestige, status, desire to impress others. All this comes in material. Tyagena. Shilena, gunena, karmana. One's qualities, one's behavior, one's nature, temperament, all these things create a kind of culture around us. And we all are influencing the atmosphere around us by our behavior. And many others are going to see us and imitate us and follow us. So we have to be prepared for that, especially the leaders. If you are a leader, like I have a practical experience. Generally, I am very, very punctual. Generally, exactly at the time of the class, I used to go. So, one or two days, I was very, very busy with so many visitors, and I was just 3-4 minutes late for the Brahmacharya class, and I found all the other people also coming 3-4 minutes late from the subsequent days. Because more things are learned by observation than by our teaching. Yeah, we can easily see that. So, even a grown-up boy or a girl or a family member who may be 20 years or 25 years can still be treated as a child in Krishna consciousness. Because we are all children in Krishna consciousness. We haven't spent, many of the devotees haven't spent so many years. We have spent 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 6 years. So, in that respect, we are children. Once His Holiness Bhaktivikasa Swami was telling, see, the formative years in Krishna consciousness are very important in deciding what kind of Vaishnava you are going to be in this life. Then we asked the Maharaj, what are the formative years? He said, first 10 to 15 years, he said. I generally thought formative years means first 6 months or 1 year. I thought neophyte devotee means 1 year, no, devotee, we thought. He says formative years are 10 to 15 years. So, they really have a tremendous influence in our future, how it's going to be. And you'll also find there are different types of devotees in different places. Some devotees tend to become political. They're very political. Some devotees are always fault-finding. Some devotees are very critical. And some devotees are lazy. Some devotees are slow to do things. Some devotees don't do any service. Some devotees always sahajayik nature. Some devotees are always controversial. They go to controversial philosophy. Anytime they open their mouth, they will hook on to some controversial topic. So where it begins, if you try to find out, you will always find there is some connection. Without connection, doesn't happen. Some kind of connection is there. One last point I would like to clarify. Sometimes leaders may argue that, you know, my dependents, those whom you call as my dependents, they were actually, some of them are whimsical, some of them are this, some of them are that. You know, I am not responsible for them. You will see that some people saying this, some leaders. And it is true to some extent also. Let us see how it is relevant. Like we say, phalena parichete, we say, you can see from the fruits that a tree produces. So by seeing the disciples of a particular guru, we can say how great is the guru, that the guru has produced such nice disciples. But at the same time, you will also find some unsurrendered disciples or fallen disciples or mischievous disciples of a guru, and guru cannot be blamed for that. Why? This question was asked to Prabhupada also. Like in a tree, in a mango tree, you find first the mango is raw, so it is not very tasty. But if the mango remains connected to the tree, gradually it becomes ripe, and a ripe fruit. Then it becomes very relishable. But sometimes you find a mango falls off the tree before becoming ripe. And then you find, you know, it doesn't have a proper taste. That kind of mangoes. Similarly, somebody may be physically under the shelter of some authority, but their heart is not under the shelter of that authority. They have given their heart to someone else or something else they have given. So it cannot be accepted that they are under this authority. Physically they may be present, but they are not actually sheltered under that authority at all. So they may be whimsical, they may be doing what they want. So if you carefully observe every individual, you will see that although physically we all are under some shelter, in our heart we also have taken shelter of many others by whom we are inspired by. And those people whom we are taking shelter, they will be influencing our personality. You will see that. That this is very much observable. It's not very difficult to understand. That is why you find all people are not the same. Although I made a point some time ago that the leader has a tremendous influence on the subordinate. And when that influence is there on subordinate, if the subordinate also takes shelter of that leader. Like if a counselor counselees, I have seen many times the counselor, the counselees have a very similar nature like the counselor. I observed it. I have made observation in many people. Like, you know, me and Gauranga Prabhu, we were trained by Devamrita Prabhu. So a lot of our gestures, our speech, you will find a lot of similarity with Devamrita Prabhu. You know, you find that. That depends on how much shelter we take. So if a counselee takes full shelter of the counselor, you will see that even the, sometimes the tone of speech, sometimes the behavior, everything looks very similar. You observed it? Huh? You'll observe it. Which means actually the counselor has tremendously influenced the counseling in that way. So it's a two-way thing. It's not only one-way thing. But sometimes you find that the counselee or a disciple of a guru is not so much influenced by the guru because their inspiration comes from somebody else in various places. And then you will find that person's influence in their life. You will find like that. So why I'm making this point, sometimes a mother or a father in Krishna consciousness movement, they lament that we could not make our children Krishna conscious. Here Rishabhadeva is saying that you cannot be a mother or a father if you don't make your dependence Krishna conscious. So what can we do? Alas, what sin have we committed that our son or daughter is not becoming Krishna conscious? We want our son or daughter to, you know, not simply impress others but to be a genuine devotee. But we find that they don't exhibit such qualities. What to do? They know that, you know, on one hand they want to make them devotees. On the other hand, they don't want to push them too much. If you push them too much, they will go away. They will not become devotees at all. So they are wondering many times, parents in Krishna consciousness movement. Sometimes it so happens that a parent comes to Krishna consciousness after the children are born and grown up. So now they want to make them devotees, but they can't. But sometimes, even after the parents become devotees, they are initiated devotees, they get a child who doesn't become a devotee. Sometimes, like Anga, Raja Anga got a son, Vena. Like that it happens sometimes. That was a special arrangement of the Lord to detach Anga and send him to forest so that he can go back home back to Godhead. Like that. So it may happen like that, but in such cases, Prabhupada also used to say, the duty of the parents is to set a very good example and try to give Krishna consciousness to their dependents. That's all. So they have done their duty. And it is up to their children whether they take to it or not, because ultimately everyone has a free will. No one can be controlled. Even Krishna doesn't control the jiva when he wants to come to material world. He leaves him. Similarly, parents also can give the good impression of divine impression to the children and then leave them. So what we learn in our life from this wonderful purport is that we ourselves should become a very good example in our lives. And we should be always on a mode of self-improvement, on a mode of learning. The great people, the wise people are those who always seek opportunities to learn. They never think, now I have become a pure devotee. They never think that. Even pure devotees think there is room for improvement. Only a neophyte devotee thinks, now I am perfect. So we should be in a mode of improvement and self-improvement and self-analysis so that we can become better representatives of Srila Prabhupada and ISKCON society. There are certainly lot of anarthas in our heart which are dominating, which are not allowing us to behave like a pure devotee. And we know that. And there is an ongoing struggle in our lives. On one hand, we want to preach and expand. On the other hand, we are setting a poor example. We have difficulty to become a good example. So this ongoing struggle is a very good struggle. If you don't feel the struggle, it's a problem. If somebody says, no, I don't feel any struggle, Prabhu, I am all right. That means it's very dangerous. Like somebody has a cancer and they don't know they have cancer. Like that. So we have to have this ongoing struggle of self-improvement. That's one lesson we learn. And we also learn the lesson that the impression given to children are the dependents. That will actually bring out a very great leader in their life if those impressions are given at the right time, in the right way, whether they be children or whether they be subordinates or dependents. The preachers have a very, very important role. With one last humorous example, I would like to conclude. Once my dear senior Shyamanand Prabhu was telling, I will not tell you where he went, but he said he went to one particular program for giving a program. He was told to go to that place. He said he went to that program and he said the devotees there, the kirtan that was going on, he said it was breathtaking. He said, I was so afraid. People were flying in the air and they were, you know, with both hands open out, you know, they were revolving, hitting one another, and he was telling, I was fearful that, you know, my teeth should be protected. So he was holding his mouth and singing. He said, and then after some time they gave him a vampire to play. And he was playing. And then another devotee took the vampire and showed him how to play very loudly. Boom, 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 boom. They were playing the vampire. So, and then one devotee caught him by the hand and told him, Prabhuji, sit here. So they were dealing very aggressively, he was telling. The way they were behaving with him, with respect to, and they were demanding what you should do and what you should not be doing. So he was telling, it's a kind of culture. Sometimes a particular type of culture is set in motion by the superiors who have been guiding them. You understand what I am saying? You go to any place, there is a particular type of culture. Some places have very caring culture, very loving culture. When the visitors come, they are loved, cared, attended, and they feel very safe and secure and very warm, and they feel the warm experience. Other places, you go, you are treated very much like an unwanted guest. You are treated very sharply. At least in our temple, we have the time-conscious culture. Everyone is looking at the watch always. Everyone is running. When some new person comes into temple and he wants to know something, everyone wants to escape in four directions. So I am just telling this. Why? Because we all create a certain type of vibration, and the culture which we are spreading all around us. And I am just telling one example where we have scope of improvement, and we have a lot to improve. If you think deeply, there is unlimited scope for improving our lives. And we create impression in others by our behavior, by our speech, by our nature, by our culture. So it's very wonderful example of Parikshit Maharaj. When he came out of the womb of his mother, he is going out here and there searching for people, searching for Krishna, by testing everyone. And thus he came to be called as Parikshit. Grantha Shrimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhaktavinda ki. Jai.